now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. The photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Bernard Günther. Bernard grew up in Munich, Germany. He moved to California in 1994 to study drums and percussion at the Percussion Institute of Technology in Los Angeles. His exploration into rhythm and music became a journey of self-discovery and healing, which led him to bodywork and the healing arts. Being very emotionally sensitive and battling depression throughout his early life, Bernard faced his shadow and fears. His personal healing process also inspired him to explore the mysteries and hidden knowledge surrounding our planet and humanity's origins, questioning the roots of what constitutes reality and how social and spiritual conditioning impacts upon our collective and individual search for truth, fulfillment, and happiness in all aspects of life. His blog, Piercing the Veil of Reality, is a wide-ranging collection of essays, films, and interviews ranging from spirituality, shamanism, psychology, self-work, esotericism, history, to the paranormal and hyper-dimensional realities. His YouTube channel is Time of Transition, and he also has another website, bernardgunther.com, and I will have all these links on the Cosmic Switchboard website as well as on our dedicated YouTube channel. So without any further ado, Bernard Günther, how are you?
Hey, James. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. This is really a treat for me. I've really enjoyed doing the webinars we have in the past, the hyperdimensional matrix one, as well as advanced love bite discussion we had with our colleagues. We're in a time of transition. We're just going over some of your information again. And it's interesting how so much of it jibes with what myself and others have talked about in the recent past. We've observed this transition point, and we've even began to see a separation between people of different consciousness. And as you know, we don't talk about this in an elitist fashion that one is above or necessarily above another person. We all go through our own kind of spiritual journey in our own pace. At this point in our journey now, our collective journey, Bernard, what are the most important things that people need to be aware of moving forward?
Well, first of all, as you pointed out, it's an important point to make that this is indeed an individual journey, right? That we all have our own personal lessons to learn and talents to develop in our own spiritual soul evolution. So, you know, that throws the whole comparison out of the window and whatnot and who is in what stage. It's just really about one's personal process. But what I see happening right now, and as we can see in the world, it's kind of topsy-turvy chaos and craziness out there. But, you know, you and I and many others have been aware of the hyperdimensional matrix for many years. And I feel that's becoming more and more important to understand and be aware of the hidden controllers beyond the manifestation of the 3D matrix, which we see in government, corporations, and even secret societies and black operations and whatnot, which is, you know, it's important to be aware of on some level to keep an eye on it, but not get sucked into the 3D matrix aspect of the matrix and trying to fight it like fighting shadows on the wall. Because for many of us, as you know, we have done our research, gone through our own process, we can see the unseen thread of all of how all the events connect, and they're pretty much the same script, right? And different appearances, and now it's even more in our faces. And it's geared towards making us react to really even react violently and fight each other in order to feed off of that frequency, right? The divide and conquer strategy of the matrix control system. So it becomes, for me personally, blatantly obvious to look beyond the appearances to see, to really understand the hidden forces operating through their puppets, psychopathic puppets, political figures, corporate figures, bankers, whatever. And also understand that the transition we're in right now is also, you know, most importantly, an internal process that we need to step up and raise our frequency through our internal work in order to transcend the matrix, right? And not necessarily fight it on a 3D level or trying to, you know, take down the government and all of that, which is in a sense a trap in itself. And Gurdjieff talked about it, he called it the trap of the revolutionary mind. And what I see now happening in, you know, my personal relationships and the many people I work with is what I call, others have called as well, a timeline reality split, in the sense that, you know, it's really the name of the game is frequency and vibration. As Nikola Tesla said, if you want to know the secrets of the universe, think of frequency and vibration. So as the dark and light is increasing, and the energies, you know, even the cosmic energies that kind of force us to awaken increase, we are being attracted more to people of like-minded, of the same frequency, and people or situations or places, jobs we're in that don't resonate on our frequency or vibration anymore go out of our lives. And most often this is a very destructive process, so to speak, right? It's about really letting go and not holding on and aligning with what's happening from a bigger perspective. What I see happening is this split, because I don't feel or I don't see that whole of humanity is going to wake up. I mean, even from an esoteric perspective, that's just simply not in the cards, so to speak, because there are 7 billion people on this planet with vast different levels of being, different soul lessons and all of that. So it's important not get project outwardly, not get into, you know, victim consciousness in terms of what the controllers are doing to us, or also not getting into savior or martyr complex of trying to save the world and whatnot. It's really, yes, being aware of what's happening on the world stage to a degree, but not get too invested in it, distracted in it, but also turn inwardly and do our own inner house cleaning, you know, like you, James, and other of our friends and colleagues have talked about, in particular our last webinar, the hyperdimensional interference and discernment. It's really about checking ourselves within, our own self-work, our own blind spots and wounds, and work on that and heal that, so there's no match for any interference or attacks or intrusion. And that's also how we raise our frequency, right, to another level of being. And that also dictates or basically manifests reality we then experience. And that's, in a sense, the real quote-unquote secret of reality creation. It's not about thinking positive thoughts and all of that and, you know, denying evil and denying the dark. It's also about, it's almost the opposite. It is facing the dark, facing our fears within and not projecting it outwardly. And then we, as we clear ourselves, we heal ourselves, we can then embody and anchor these higher frequencies, which help us to transcend the matrix and connect us to truly like-minded people who resonate on the same frequency. So that's kind of what I see happening in a nutshell.
I agree, Bernard. What I've observed in my own personal journey is when I embarked on my journey to understand more, and of course at some point you're going to run smack dab into this three-dimensional matrix of control, which of course is just the outward manifestation of the hyperdimensional matrix of control. When one buys into that, I've seen this happen to others, it's happened to me, and they get so worked up about the monetized debt system, the inherent injustice and oppression, we begin to embody within us this rage and unquenchable desire at times for vengeance. And I know in my own personal journey, Bernard, when I was my most angry and resentful about the way the system was set up, that was when I went through the worst experiences I've ever went through, because the reptilians and all these other negative beings, it was like they looked at me resonating in their bandwidth and they said, yummy, yummy, yummy.
Exactly. And I don't myself included, I don't take myself out of the equation. You know, I call that phase of my life the romantic revolutionary, you know, of like being very angry and being pissed off at the world and the matrix, and obviously also our conscience. How can you not at first get angry at all the injustices, atrocities, and what is being done? And once you see the manipulation, so I feel, you know, it's actually a natural step to first become angry and not be afraid of anger, like righteous anger. It's also not about demonizing anger, right?
This is true, absolutely.
Yeah, anger is can be used constructively and creatively if you don't project it outwardly in shadow, but it gives you the drive to stand up, you know, for what is right, and also from a creative perspective to become more productive and find ways to help other people to see, to wake up, to spread some seeds of awareness, but most importantly also to check ourselves, right? To not give away our power. Because like, as you said, I experienced the same, right? You get stuck in this anger frequency and project it outwardly, and that is just the perfect food for the hidden forces. And that's exactly what they want, right? They want us on some level to be so reactive and project our anger outwardly in order to keep us in this frequency present, all based on the divide and conquer strategy.
You mentioned earlier the deconstructive aspect of it, which, you know, at times we would like it to be a less painful process, right? But sometimes we just have to move through it, and it is only with the benefit of hindsight, after a lot of self-work, a lot of self-healing has taken place, that we can look back and say, okay, I can look back at that dark time, and I can see how much I've grown, how much I've changed and adapted to the current circumstances. So right. It's important that people, like, I'm a Scorpio, so Pluto was strong in my chart.
Mm-hmm.
But could you talk a bit and tell our listeners a bit about how the Pluto, the deconstructive aspect, need not be an adversary, but if we can, in an alchemical fashion, change that Pluto deconstruction aspect to our benefit?
Well, one of my astrologer friends calls Pluto the atomic bomb of, you know, of the underworld.
Yeah.
Now, you dive deep, and I have some Scorpio friends, and they tend to dive deep, and that's part of their life path and lesson. Right, but like in the archetypal hero's journey, it's necessary to go into the underworld, which is the realm of Pluto, right, and confront the shadow, fight the dragons within and without. And, there's also the saying, you can only connect the dots looking back, and when we're in the midst of it, going through some intense suffering and attacks and interferences, depression, whatnot, it doesn't make sense, and it can be, you know, very, very challenging, and you lose hope and all of that. But what I've realized for myself, and I'm sure you can relate to it as well, when I look back of my own struggle and also a battling of hyperdimensional interferences and attacks and whatnot, in the end, these were initiations, right? And that's really what it comes down to. The awakening process is not this new age type of all of a sudden you're one with everything and you just live in love and light. No, it's a destructive process. It's about destroying everything that is not untrue. You know, Adyashanti said enlightenment is a destructive process. It's not much to do with peace and love and light. And through this initiatory process, you know, we are also being put on our own individual paths and learn important lessons which we can help others with, like in your work and what you've experienced, very challenging, horrific experiences, but having worked through it, having survived it, understood it, done yourself, or, you're now in a position to help others. And that's really what it comes down to, in the sense we're all quote-unquote wounded healers. We heal ourselves, go through our experiences and share them with others and can help each other, so to speak. And, you know, as our own mutual friend Tom Montag said about hyperdimensional attack, he even said that attack is kind of, or any form of attack, you know, if we're being publicly attacked by others, whatnot, for our work, which is common in this kind of line of work, you know, attack kind of implies victimization, right? And that's how these forces want to disempower us, ourselves as well, to get us into victim consciousness. But in the end, you can utilize them as Tom said, as teachers, right? Because as we have also explored in past webinars and in our own experiences, they can only get to us, attack us at our own blind spots and wounds, which they heighten in order to get to the luge, the frequency which they feed upon, right? To trigger us more into suffering. But if we learn more to come from a zero-point non-reactive place of consciousness and take responsibility and really check ourselves within without blame outwards, we can see our issues are being highlighted by these attacks or interferences, and then we can check ourselves and heal ourselves and learn from it, and that's again how we also raise our frequency and are not subjected to these attacks anymore. But yeah, disillusionment, or what, how is it in esotericism called, moral bankruptcy, is inevitable on this path. You even see it in the film, you know, Matrix, of all this, probably one of the best movies that depicts this whole situation, and a lot of esoteric symbolism, where Neo goes through his own disillusionment process, right? When he plugs out the tubes, and he sees the feeding fields of all these machines using humans' batteries, and he's in shock and at first doesn't want to believe it. That is, from an esoteric perspective, that is threshold to be crossed. And you see it in a lot of metaphors and allegories and mythology, which they talk about the hero needing to cross that threshold. And unfortunately, that is what a lot of people try to consciously or unconsciously avoid, that disillusionment process, which is, it's not easy. It doesn't feel good, right? But the only way out is through. Once you step into the fire, that's really the fire of alchemical transmutation, right? And let yourself burn in the fire and burn anything away that is not true, then eventually you'll be reborn in your true self, which all esoteric teachings talked about as well, which is actually the rebirth of Christ. You know, the crucifixion, Christ, all this allegory is about, he's being reborn in his higher self, in his true self, and then you vibrate on a frequency where the matrix cannot get you. It's simply not a frequency match, because as we have explored in our last webinar about hyperdimensional interference as well, we talked about how very mechanical and predictable these forces act, and you see it even on the 3D world stage, it's always the same script, just different appearances, so they are not very creative. And if there's no frequency match, it's simply like, okay, you're almost quote-unquote invisible, right? If you have attained a certain level of embodiment in being, and that's really the process, and that process is different for each of us. But again, this the disillusionment, the death of the personality, of the conditioned personality, of all the programming is inevitable on this path. And I feel that's what we're going through now, on an accelerated level. I see this happening with many people in their lives, in the world stage, you know. And there are two choices. Either you fight the changes and blame outwardly, or you engage in spiritual bypassing, you know, distract yourself with all kinds of addictions and whatnot, or you step consciously into the fire and really transmute it and transcend it, right? And having faith in that process. Because I also feel, and as a note of personal experience, once we consciously engage in that process, we are being guided. Because there are positive forces beyond all the occult, hidden, evil, hostile forces, the matrix control system. There are positive forces. Our own embodied spirit or the divine is helping and guiding us in more subtle ways, you know, not bailing us out necessarily, because we still need to learn the lesson ourselves. But having that faith and trust in life and just doing the work, so to speak, will help us get through this.
What I've noticed and what you've commented upon in the past, Bernard, is the trifecta of manipulated emotions of fear, mm-hmm. of shame, and guilt, and how all that comes together with the hyperdimensional forces at work to keep us embodied but in a negative frequency, and as a result of the inbuilt shame, fear, and guilt, we wind up getting more and more into our own headspace, almost as a means of escapism. Now, it's an essential part of delinking from the matrix control system to utilize fear as an ally rather than as an adversary. Could you talk a bit about the fear, the shame, and the guilt programming, mm-hmm. and how we need to conquer that, or not necessarily conquer it, but learn to assimilate and live with it and to move on?
Right. I mean, for me personally, shame and guilt has been a huge part of my life and was very challenging to work through this, you know, because these forces, you know, was always got triggered in my own life through public attacks or hyperdimension interferences. My own guilt and shame got triggered, you know, which also ties into inability or having a hard time making boundaries or saying no right? Even no to the intrusion, to no to being manipulated, or no to other people who are not good for us. In the past, it was really hard for me to say no without right away feeling guilty, right? Or feeling I'm responsible for somebody else. So it's really about taking care of ourselves. And these forces, they trigger these emotional states. Mostly I find, especially when our mind or head is disconnected from the body, through thought intrusions, thought injections, right? And then these thoughts then trigger these negative, shameful emotions. And it's kind of like a vicious cycle that feeds upon itself, you know, and you get lost in your own quote-unquote shit, so to speak. And I feel most people deal with this, which also relates to, speaking of fear of what other people think of us, right? This is huge. That's what keeps most people from speaking out, fear of what, you know, especially in close relationships, if one person's waking up, the other one is not, or fear of what our coworkers, friends, family may think. All of that, you know, plays in favor of the matrix controllers. But what I found with regards to your question about fear is really confronting your fear, right? Especially if these emotions come up, what I found is really, instead of escaping them, especially instead of dissociating or numbing yourself, is go deeper into these feelings consciously, experience them, feel them. And that's also, from an alchemical perspective, how you transmute them, you know, and you may cry or other emotions come up, but the healing is through the body to really experience them, not to linger on them, right? Not to feed into them, not get into self-loathing and self-pity, but consciously feeling them in order to transmute them rather than avoid them. So fear in itself is actually, if you look at it, even from a logical perspective or common sense perspective, it's a complete illusion. Because fear, any fear thought we have coming up, it's based on time. It's based on future. It's based on the illusion of linear time. It's based on if scenarios or worries about the future. What if that happens? What if this happens? What, you know, and all these things. And that's very self-defeating, when in fact there is no fear in the very present moment, right? The mind, supported or manipulated by thought injections, makes up all kinds of fears. And Castaneda talked about the predator mind, you know, that injects us with all these fear thoughts and fear loops. And that's what keeps us in the matrix, and that's how we police each other. You know, people who are afraid attack others, project their shadow, or ad hominem attacks with cognitive dissonance and all of that. So confronting fear within yourself and also realizing that fear is not real, really, at all, is a big step towards healing and transcending the matrix. And also differentiating between fear and danger. Danger can be real when we are in a, you know, in a situation, for example, a tiger is charging at us, so it's dangerous. But you still have a choice to respond with fear or not, right? You still need to take care of self, but you can do that without the frequency of fear. And that's really key in this day and age, to get out of this fear frequency, you know? On the flip side, what I've noticed in others, and also myself, not taking myself out of the equation, most often we're actually afraid unconsciously of our own power, of how we're truly capable of true freedom, of our, you know, sovereignty. And, you know, but as long as we are afraid, or most people who are so conditioned by society, official culture and whatnot, because they have lost their inner connection to spirit, to their own intuition, to their own inner authority, so they live in fear, right? And then project outwardly the need for government, you know, authoritarian followers and authority in general. Right, that's how the matrix operates. They want us to be afraid of ourselves, of each other, and give us, basically trying to save us from ourselves by installing all these institutions of control and authority and whatnot. So even going deeper with it, any little fear we have is based ultimately on the fear of death. And, you know, it's a good exercise. I've done it a lot in the past and do it periodically, to meditate on death. You know, because from an esoteric perspective, like I mentioned before, the whole crossing the threshold, the transmutation, going into the underworld, the disillusionment is a death process. It's about dying to what's old, dying to the false. And that's also what's happening in the world right now. It's I see so many people trying to save the world, trying to change the system within the system, when a lot of what's happening, what's going on in the world is not in alignment with the higher frequencies. It needs to disintegrate and die, let it die, let it go. Just like you need to let your old self die and let go so the new can be reborn. That's the way I see it and experience it.
You also talk about the importance of getting in touch with our vulnerability without judging ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because what I've observed also, and I went through the same process, is that when we fear our own vulnerability, then the fear of mortality comes into play, the fear of lack of abundance, lack of money, the fear of being lonely for the rest of our lives, all these things kind of build upon each other. But you make the point that when we get in touch with our vulnerability, we begin to heal ourselves. And then when we can share these vulnerable moments, and that's a scary thing, mm-hmm. share these vulnerable moments with others of a like mind on their own healing path, then we begin to heal ourselves and heal others. Because what I've observed, Bernard, is especially where males are concerned, is a lot of overcompensation, where because they're afraid of their own emotions, afraid of the vulnerability and whatever kinds of hang-ups they have not resolved, they project outwardly. And this could be in the form of boastfulness, in an abrupt manner, in being insensitive to the needs of others. Can you talk about the need of getting past this vulnerability paradigm, you know, in a holistic alchemical sense?
Yeah, good point. Especially, I've noticed that the self also, again, not taking myself out of the equation, but in particular men, it's very hard for men to step into their vulnerability, right? Because in official culture, society, men or anyone really in general, stepping into vulnerability requires humility and owning some things that don't make you appear strong. So a lot of men mistake vulnerability as weakness, right? But far from it, showing vulnerability, getting into your vulnerability is courageous. It's an act of courage and empowers one, right? And especially, as you mentioned, if we are able to share it with others, yeah, it creates compassion and empathy. We can relate to each other on a much more deeper level, beyond the pretense and social mask and appearances and trying to have it all together. You know, I mean, there's little story I've told in the past. You know, I came from Germany to the U.S. and I remember in the first few months I was in Los Angeles, people asked me or like were greeting me with "How are you?" I've never heard that before. I'm like, "Whoa, this person's interested in how I'm doing." So I'm unloading to them how I'm doing and like my life's problems and all of this, and like somebody's interested, and completely confused the other person until I realized this is just a greeting and you don't answer. You actually maybe reply back with "How are you?" and that's it. Or the standard answer is I'm good, I'm great, and all of that, right? It just shows how the good example of how socially conditioned this idea is of like always saying I'm good, always saying I'm busy, and all these things, and you know, never showing any sign of like, well, I maybe don't have it all together, you know. But you know, when we step into our vulnerability, that ties again into what I shared before, and acknowledge these negative, quote unquote, negative emotions. They're not negative anyway. Like you said before, it's not about judging them as any emotion as negative or positive. They just are. We just put labels on them, right? With words. But when you feel them, I mean, so much more, as you mentioned as well, when we really tap into our vulnerability, so much, the emotions are so mixed within, it's even hard to put one label on it, like loneliness, inadequacy, you know, insecurity. All we give words for them, but they're all entangled, intermixed in this blob within, so it's hard to differentiate. And it's not about, you know, trying to analyze them by thought or give names to them, but really feeling them and owning. And that's, I feel, it's very much needed on the path towards awakening, also this humility, right? Humility, not in terms of weakness, in terms of not being able to make boundaries, but humility, okay, that I'm just playing my role, that everybody else is suffering to varying degrees, right? What I've learned a lot, because I work a lot with people on one-on-one with my body work or coaching process, I see, regardless where they at, you know, maybe even more advanced, quote-unquote, in their awareness of the matrix, or other people who may be still plugged in the matrix but still suffer in their own way, everybody's suffering to varying degrees. Right, and all goes back to the original, quote-unquote, modification, the fall, you know, as we know from a hyperdimensional perspective, we have been disconnected from our original blueprint, our original DNA activation. So in a sense, collectively, we all suffer from abandonment, right? We have lost our connection to source, to who we truly are, right? And in the meantime, society, with all its pathology is becoming normalized more and more, as we see as well and have talked about. So unfortunately, a lot of people then stuff away all the vulnerability, the stuff they don't look at, and trying to adjust to a pathological world, making, you know, that's another vicious cycle. You know, there's also, speaking about men, there's so much talk about the divine feminine and reconnecting with her and the patriarchy and the feminine energy. And it's important, yes and good, but, you know, what is missing as well, like to the divine masculine, right? To also still have the warrior self, to stay no, to stand up for oneself and others, right? But I feel with this whole gender nonsense, I feel it's out there, it's so much externalized with gender between male and female, when it's all about the male and the male and feminine within us, that men almost are getting a bad rap, you know. And to show some more compassion for men, you know, a lot of men who just are overcompensating, they're angry at the world, they're overcompensating in their careers of making money and material possessions and all of that, but deep down inside they're highly insecure and suffering, even if they don't know that they're suffering, right? And by stepping into our own vulnerability, we, first of all, most importantly, develop more compassion for ourselves, right? Which is the necessary healthy self-love, which we need to establish, which is not narcissism, just, you know, being good to ourselves without judgment. And that automatically creates compassion, empathy for others, and changes our relationships. That's a very important step, in a sense. How we relate to the world or to others is a mirror of our relationship to ourselves and our relationship to our own body and embodiment, right? So the more we like angry and pissed off at others and blame the world and others and this and that, that shows our disconnect from ourselves, our lack of compassion, empathy with ourselves, and lack of stepping into our own vulnerability. But yeah, in that process of transmutation and awakening, the disillusionment process, it literally forces us into our own vulnerability, right? And our own humility, right? And also what I've realized more and more, you know, many of us have done a lot of research in terms of how the matrix control system works and whatnot, you know, but none of us will fully get the whole picture unless you're completely awakened and enlightened and all these things. So it's also about honoring the unknown and the mystery, right? And that you never know what tomorrow will bring, and embrace life as it is, and always understand, for me anyway, my life, quote unquote, philosophy is all there is, are lessons for the sake of soul evolution. And that's an individual process for each.
You quote from Philip Shepard, "Inhabiting your body, reuniting with intelligence is one of the most potent political statements you can make." Mm-hmm. The points you just made are key, because all of those negative emotions, energy and motion, of shame, of guilt, of the fear of delving into one's own vulnerability, it prevents us, it militates against becoming embodied. You speak a lot, Bernard, about the importance of being embodied. Too many people in the New Age movement, too many people through the form of substance abuse of one form or another, they are disembodied. They're too much in their headspace precisely because they don't want to delve into those feelings, those inbuilt, shame-based feelings. And as I see it, our lack of embodiment makes us playthings for this hyperdimensional matrix interference.
Absolutely. That's, you know, beyond just on a basic level, as you just said, just our head-body split, as Philip Shepard wrote in his work, and I can highly recommend his book, by the way, New Self, New World. The way he talks about it, the head representing the male aspect of consciousness and the body, especially the pelvic floor, the feminine aspect of consciousness, our connection to the wholeness within and wholeness to nature, our intuitive guidance system, right, where there's this nonverbal response, making decisions from this embodied feeling or knowing rather than via thoughts coming from the disconnected head. And, you know, that's also the problem with people wanting solutions, presenting solutions, coming from that male aspect of consciousness. And again, this is not gender related, it relates to all genders, right? As long as we are not fully embodied, which also relates to soul integration, because the term embodiment means to incarnate in the flesh. It's the soul anchored in the body. Embodiment doesn't just mean to be in touch with your body, just like an athlete. It's a spiritual process, right? To really tune into deeper your own inner guidance system, and that connects you to your own authority, to your own spirit, to your higher self. But if we are disconnected from the body and are living just in our head and take in the world through the head, we see the world in very fragmented ways. We don't see the wholeness. We don't see unity, right? And how it all plays itself together. So consequently, all the solutions we present from the head state based on seeing a fragmented world are also fragmented. So it just, despite the well-meaning intentions, it creates more fragmentation, more need for control, right, which is the male aspect of consciousness, more division, more divide and conquer, and not coming from a holistic perspective, right, from a full embodied holistic perspective. And, you know, as you said, tying that into the hyperdimensional matrix and how they're being controlled, that exactly works in their favor. And that's why we see in this day and age, especially with the rise of technology, right, for example, the internet, Facebook, social media, it's a great tool, right? It connects many more of us sharing information. But there's also the downside, you know, staring at the screen 24/7 or just taking in information intellectually keeps us head-centric. We forget the body, right? And as long as there's the head-body split, we're not fully embodied. Also from an energetic perspective, our aura has leaks or cracks, we don't have our protective shield, and that's how the intrusions happens, especially through our own minds. And that's even now being even more emphasized, and I feel the biggest challenge we'll be facing as a collective humanity is the dawning of transhumanism and AI, because that's the fusion of man and machine and making us even more disembodied, right? Even more head-centric, even more plugged into machine. And that's the ultimate goal and agenda, to really completely lose our connection to spirit, our embodiment selves, to almost extract our souls in order to prime humans as hosts for their own, you know, essence to host in this takeover, basically, right? Because as we know, these hyperdimensional forces, reptilians and many others, they cannot exist in this 3D vibrational state, right? But what they are been working on for thousands of years, literally leading up to this time of history we're in right now, is priming ourselves through genetic modification over thousands of years. Anything what you see in the world, vaccines, chemtrails, GMOs, food, all this stuff is really designed to even fragment ourselves even more in order to prime our bodies as vessels for them to host in us, so to speak. And, you know, we see already like many world leaders, psychopaths are basically fully possessed by these entities. So that's why that embodiment process is really, really key in the awakening process, to really make a conscious connection to our bodies, to really learn to make decisions from this nonverbal gut pelvic floor response and get out of our heads, right? And that I see that's the challenge for most people. It's been the biggest challenge in my life. Most people I work with, men or women alike, are caught in their head, disconnected from their bodies, right? And have lost their own inner guidance. That's really how we can transcend the matrix and emancipate ourselves and become our own true sovereign spiritual self through this embodiment process and the fusion, essentially, or a chemical marriage of the inner male and female.
One of the problems that I had to come to grips with, Bernard, is when I was suffering from severe headspace issues, because of the inbuilt shame and guilt and self-loathing at times. I mean, picture me with like a big rubber mallet and just boinking myself on the head over and over when I made the slightest mistake, when I made the slightest faux pas in my life, when I thought I drew embarrassment upon myself. I would just hammer myself mercilessly. I didn't realize at the time, of course, that this was all due to this inbuilt shame, guilt, fear of vulnerability process, and then on top of that, the OCD obsessive-compulsive thought disorders which these negative hyperdimensional entities were inputting into my mind. For example, when I look at old pictures of myself, I see a thin man.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, I was so afraid of being lonely, of not having, being in a meaningful relationship, that these OCD thought loops were telling me over and over I was fat, I would never have a date, anything like that.
Mm.
All these thoughts were coming into my head, and so I would do things like starve myself and everything else. And I look at these pictures now with the benefit of many years in hindsight behind me. Man, I was a thin-looking guy, so where did those thoughts come from? It was because I was in my head space, and I was too shame-based to plug into my own body and hence plug into source. And I'm sure you've come across this in your work, Gunther. This is a very sensitive issue to delve in.
Mm.
Once someone has gotten to that place where they're comfortable being embodied, where they're at peace with whatever shame-based issues they've had to work through, what happens if a person is in a partnership with another person who still has yet to go through that alchemical trial-by-fire deconstructive process? Because the one person who's gone through a lot of the self-work and self-healing, they know that this other person is still heavily enmeshed in the matrix. They still have love and still have compassion for them. But it's clear at times that for that person who's done a lot of self-work, for them to go where they need to go on their own journey,
yeah,
they're either going to have to do it alone or they're going to have to find a way to get this other person to get on board. Like, how does someone deal with that tricky situation?
That's a good question and a big topic for many people. I see this in many relationships, right? That one person basically wakes up, the other one still plugged in, so to speak. The problem is also from a hyperdimensional perspective, as you know, if one person wakes up, the other one not waking up can be used as a portal, as, you know, an agent, unconscious agent, to keep the other person from awakening unconsciously. It's hard to give a general answer, so to speak, because every situation is specific. But what I've noticed, if one person is really waking up and sincerely engaged in the process of seeking truth, embodiment, self-work, and the other person is not, essentially separation is inevitable, right? Otherwise, you're going to make it hard. You keep each other from moving on and evolving. And even like going into the esoteric law of free will, we cannot force another person to wake up. You know, I see this a lot. I've in myself, you know, in past relationships or friends, if I'm an awakening process, I want out of well-meaning intention to wake other people up or my friends or lovers to wake up as well. But I was projecting almost also what I needed to do for myself onto the other person and infringing their free will, because you cannot give until it's asked for, right? You need to accept their free will to stay asleep, because if you look at our own personal process, for the ones who have started to awaken and engage in the process, we did it out of our own free will. Nobody imposed it on us. Yes, maybe got triggered in the positive sense because of somebody spread the seeds or made us aware, but still was our own free will choice. So in a relationship, it's tricky because there are emotions involved and maybe codependency and all kinds of invisible cords and all of that. And sometimes we then come out of a misplaced idea of love, of wanting to wake the other person up, wake the other person up as well. But, you know, we need to respect their free will and their path and where they are at, right? And in a sense, in any partnership relationship, even if both people are, you know, more or less aware and waking up, they're still, everybody's in their own individual process. Right, and so it comes really down to conscious relating, right? Because no relationship is perfect. We all have our own personal issues and lessons to learn, but we can support each other in that, right? Without getting into expectation, blame, and projection and all of that, we can each other support in the process, but we're still having the boundary of like, okay, this is your process, this is your path, this is my path, right? We can still work together, but in the end, you know, it's kind of almost working in a relationship. It's almost you're working on three things. It's your own process, your own self-work, the other person, it's her or his own process, and the relationship as a whole. All right? So I see it from the bigger picture of awakening in terms of relationship. Really, both people need to be sincerely engaged in the process, and there needs to be a basic compatibility and a foundation, right? It doesn't mean it's going to be harmonious and all love and light all the time. you know, because triggers come up, shadow projections come up, but if both people are conscious in that awakening process, it can actually catalyze the relationship and help the awakening process to speed up, right? Because personal relationships bring up a lot of fire, so to speak. But if one person is waking up and the other one is not and is still fully plugged in, you know, out of personal experience and working with couples who have been on the same situation, and it creates all kinds of obstacles and drama and interferences, right? Especially through the person who is still plugged in, you know, and it's not even through her or his conscious doing. It's just they're being automatically used as portals to try to get to the other person. So it's a tricky situation, right? And again, it comes down on specific situation and individual process.
What often happens is the person who has progressed further as far as their self-work and healing, they see the good within the other person. They see the potential the other person has. They see the innate desire for love and healing within the other person, but through self-sabotage and, of course, all the attachments, cords, etheric implants, what have you, the other person at times has relapses, if you will, and goes through these vicious cycles. So thank you for talking about that. Now, in the time that we got left in this first hour, Bernard, what are some of the key aspects that you wanted to discuss as far as the hyperdimensional matrix, and what are the keys that people will notice? What are the indicators, the red flags that suggest a person is under the malign influence of a hyperdimensional matrix manipulation?
Well, there are various red flags. I mean, in a sense, you know, what I've noticed in my own life, the more you're sincere in your own embodiment process and really transmuting lead into gold, right, working through your shadow, it's all this whole embodiment process and raising your frequency will also put you in connection with true gnosis, higher knowledge of perception beyond the five senses, right, of what's in the esoteric called to see the unseen. So where I'm not a clairvoyant, I don't see energy, but I can sense more and more the hyperdimensional intrusion, be it through my own mind or working through others. It's just a sense something is off, something doesn't feel right, or I can see the person who is really there, the eyes give away a lot. So a lot of it is very on a subtle level, right? And so that's, you know, direct experience, as Sri Aurobindo talks about from Integral Yoga. It's about developing that yogic consciousness to see these intrusions and external manipulations and suggestions directly, right? And in the, you know, we all have this, what I call a spiritual immune system. And if you look back in some of our experiences where we have been attacked or got, you know, manipulated and we took the bait, so to speak, but something within us was always aware, it saw the red flags. And looking back of some of my own experience, and we have talked about, for example, the love bite scenario and others, I was aware of the red flags, right? I saw them even a moment to a degree, but I didn't trust them. So, and these red flags come from this more intuitive embodiment sensation or knowing rather than like a logical mind thing. But because of, again, like we talked about before, guilt or shame programming, we don't trust ourselves most often. We don't trust these deeper intuitive insights and override them, right? You know, the more we learn, again, stepping into vulnerability, develop healing ourselves, developing self-love, trusting ourselves, the embodiment process, we can become more aware of the red flags and really trust them and act on them. And most often it really happens, you know, concrete examples is if, you know, gaslighting or other person is clearly projecting their shadow onto us or putting us down for, you know, our work and or is specifically triggering our childhood wounds like guilt and shame, right, that make us even more disempowered. Or sometimes it's even more obvious when we see like a personality change that, you know, a person, a partner, a friend is has a certain appearance one day, and then all of a sudden you bring something up and they switch, something happens, something energetically. And what I've also noticed, that's why I feel, you know, it's very tricky, especially online communication via texting or messaging, because people can always say the right things, whatever they type on the screen, but it's a whole different level when you engage in communication with the person in the flesh, one-on-one, with body language and energetic impressions. You know, I've met many people who say the right words coming from this intellectual headspace and can, you know, with a smile on their face and say just exactly what you want to hear and all of that. And they seem to be knowledgeable, but energetically the whole body and what the message I'm getting from there, it's completely off. It's almost like they have this mask and it doesn't align with the words that are coming out of their mouths, right? So really trusting more on our energetic impressions, which again goes back to the embodiment process and the bodily impressions we get when we interact with other people. This is how we can detect intrusions. And as one of my teachers and healers I've worked with for a few years, she told me, you know, the more and more we seek truth, engage in the sincere self work, transcend the matrix, establish the higher frequency, the more we build this shield around ourselves on an auric level, energetic level, so they can less intrude through our own minds, the more they will try to come through other people. And she even said anybody who is not sincerely engaged in seeking truth or this embodiment process and self-work, shadow work and whatnot, is basically a carrier of Trojan, is a Trojan horse. That's how she called it, like a carrier of entities to varying degrees, right? It can be very subtle little critters to full-on demonic reptilian intrusion possession with outside their range of awareness, completely unconscious on their parts. But it befuddles us, you know. I don't know if you know, sometimes maybe people you interact with, you get a weird feeling, it like confuses you. Something is off energetically, although they speak just the right words. And I've experienced that. And that shows me there's something else attached to this person that is trying to get to me. And it's like something intruding into my energy field. So it's also really tapping more into this extrasensory perception, so to speak, to spot these intrusions and interferences coming through other people. And importantly, not making it personal, because that's what the matrix forces want to do. They want to engage us in personal fights and ego fights and ties into the divide and conquer, because that frequency is what they feed off of, be it in interpersonal relationship fighting or we see on the world stage right now with all the hate projected towards Trump and this whole puppet setup there, right? This is, from a hyperdimensional perspective, this is exactly what they want. They couldn't care less who is in power, Trump, Clinton, whatever. They want that frequency of divide and conquer and projecting hate and disgust onto the man. That's his role, really. And he triggers people with his tweets, whatever, like he's playing them like a fiddle and people buy into it, right? They react. So it's really important, you know, that's why, again, it's important to see the hidden forces beyond the 3D matrix and how it's played, and not getting distracted by the shadows on the wall, as in Plato's allegory of the cave.
Could you tell people how to get a hold of you, Bernard, and also could you give your website addresses?
Yeah, my main website, blog of all my articles, also films, interviews, and whatnot, is at veilofreality.com. And there's also a link to my other website, which is my name, bernhardgunther.com, which is integrative body work and holistic coaching. I'm a body worker. I work with people in person, the body energy work, and also offer holistic coaching sessions via Skype. And also a link to my YouTube channel. There are some films and interviews, youtube.com/timeoftransition. And on my blog, there's also a link to Facebook, so people can connect to me via Facebook as well.
Well, we've had a fascinating first segment. You've been listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show and our very special guest, Bernard Gunther. In the second hour, I will ask Bernard about the dark side of shamanism, what he sees as far as the potential pitfalls that one that's on this voyage of self-discovery. We're talking about people that have, for the most part, and even people that really haven't done a lot of the self-work, the potential pitfalls one may find when they delve into shamanism with psychedelics, what have you. And also I'm going to ask Bernard about the whole concept of UFO contact. More and more people that have a certain level of awareness, they know they are surrounded by these unseen forces, interdimensional, extraterrestrial, hyperdimensional, what have you, and that some of them are having sporadic or even regular contacts with some of these intelligences. So I would like Bernard's take on how one should comport themselves in such circumstances. You've been listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we will see you at the top of the next hour.